Glass panels are safer, but not a free pass. Congressmen tell GA the user fee fight is not over. And Brazil offers new info on the TAM overrun accident. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack in Mentone, Indiana. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up at Aviation for Thursday, August 2, 2007. AOPA's Air Safety Foundation has analyzed aircraft accidents from 2003 to 2006 and concluded that technologically advanced aircraft, or TAA, are involved in fewer accidents than the general aviation fleet as a whole. While TAA account for 2.8% of the GA fleet, they were involved in only 1.5% of the accidents. The study focused specifically on glass cockpit aircraft. The report did have two bits of caution. First, no technology can replace pilot vigilance. Second, the training requirements for pilots will be different in TAA than in traditional aircraft. Bruce Landsberg, executive director of the foundation, expects the growth in TAA to bring its own new problems. Quote, there's a potential for more takeoff and landing accidents when these aircraft are used more for instructional missions, unquote. Fuel monitoring and warning systems in TAA have advanced to the point where there was not a single fuel-related accident reported in the Air Safety Foundation study. In other general aviation aircraft, fuel management accidents occur at a rate of almost 3 per week. The TAA report did note a significant number of weather-related accidents. Of all fatal TAA accidents during the study period, 44.4% were weather-related. Just as with legacy aircraft, VFR into instrument conditions is a leading cause of weather accidents. The Air Safety Foundation encourages all pilots to begin training for TAA with electronic aids on the ground before the start of flight training. Rushing into the aircraft before grasping the avionics operation is an expensive way to learn and may increase the chance of accidents in which both pilot and instructor are focused inside the cockpit. Seven members of the House of Representatives attended a public meeting on Saturday at Air Venture to answer questions and discuss the next steps for the Aviation Reauthorization Bill. Six of the seven representatives in attendance were members of the House Aviation Subcommittee. Subcommittee Chair Jerry Costello, a Democrat from Illinois, said there was unanimous rejection of general aviation user fees at the House Aviation Subcommittee level, and he expressed optimism that the House will pass a bill with no GA user fees and with no major tax breaks for the airlines. Their message was clear, though. Every member of the general aviation community needs to be proactive in supporting the efforts of the industry associations to send the message to Congress and the President, no user fees. When asked about the timing, Costello gave it a 50-50 chance that House Resolution 2881 would make it through Ways and Means before the August recess of Congress. A member of a congressional panel in Brazil investigating the fatal July 17th landing overrun accident of a TAM Airlines A320 says transcripts of cockpit voice recordings show the pilots were told the runway was wet and slippery and that braking equipment on the aircraft was not activated on touchdown. Deputy Ephraim Filho told Bloomberg the Airbus narrowbody spoilers were not deployed on touchdown to slow the aircraft. The pilots were aware of that, Filho adds, saying that one called no spoilers seconds before the aircraft ran off the runway and hit a hangar, killing 187 people on the plane and 12 on the ground. Filho says the transcripts show the pilots tried to slow the aircraft throughout the landing, and no attempt was apparently made to abort the landing and effect a go-around. A spokeswoman for TAM declined to comment on the latest findings. Officials with Brazil's Air Force say the investigation could take as long as 10 months. NASA has found the source of an air leak from the cabin of the shuttle Endeavour and is scrambling to get it fixed in time to avoid missing the shuttle's scheduled launch on Tuesday. NASA spokesman George Diller says the leak was caused by a pressure relief valve in Endeavour's crew cabin, which will be replaced with one taken from the shuttle Atlantis. That fix will be tested on Thursday. Diller said time will be tight, but crews can complete the work in time. He added that any additional mechanical problems or bad weather, however, could still force delays. Up next on ANN, Midwest is finally listening to the AirTran merger offer. Analysts say don't look for improvements at Northwest for another month. And an engine-out practice turns into the real thing. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Hi, this is Tom Gresham. I'm the host of Wings to Adventure TV. Now, you may love airplanes, but let me tell you, you've never seen anything till you've seen them in high definition. We're shooting the whole thing in native, real 1080i high def, and it is cool. I'm telling you, it doesn't matter if it's a Cessna 180 or the hottest glass panel composite plane, it's all there on Wings to Adventure. Now, it's on the Outdoor Channel, so if you don't get it on your local system, be sure to let them know you want to see this. Go to wingstoadventure.com. You can see what our lineup is. We hope to see you there.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 2nd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. The board at Midwest Air Group, the owner of Midwest Airlines, says the company will consider the most recent $389 million buyout offer from AirTran, but cautions that a buyout is not imminent. The board also announced that there have been other companies expressing an interest in Midwest, and that it will talk to them as well. Octavian Advisors, the largest single shareholder in Midwest, long supported a merger with AirTran. CEO Richard Hurwitz calls the announcement a big step forward. AirTran CEO Joe Leonard was understandably happy. Quote, "We look forward to working with them," unquote. Wall Street seemed excited by the increased chances for a merger. Midwest stock zoomed 11% following the announcement on Tuesday. Northwest Airlines has admitted it has a problem with too few pilots to handle its schedule and announced plans to bring back pilots furloughed during its bankruptcy proceedings and even to hire new ones if needed. The airline has also preemptively canceled 3% of its August schedule to avoid angering customers with last-minute cancellations. But industry analysts say the problem won't respond to a quick fix. Furloughed pilots will need to be retrained. That could take a month or more. The Airline Pilots Association predicts that it's unlikely anything more than a fraction of the 385 rehired pilots will actually return to work. All of this suggests that August will likely be another tough month for Northwest passengers. John Clifford, who's president of San Diego-based International Travel Management, told the Detroit News, quote, "The pilot shortage will continue. It's not going to go away that easily," unquote. Analysts say don't expect relief at Northwest until well after Labor Day, when the busy summer travel season winds down. The NTSB reports that a simulated engine-out exercise became very real for two pilots in a vintage Beechcraft C-45H 2 weeks ago. According to the board's preliminary report, 64-year-old pilot Stanley Peterson had just brought the aircraft's right engine to idle and feathered the prop to simulate engine failure during the instructional flight. But then the left engine started running rough. The crew throttled the right engine back up, but it also ran rough, and it soon became clear the aircraft could not maintain level flight. Witnesses on the ground said the aircraft was at about 200 feet and descending when it made a turn to the west, leveled off, then descended sharply. The engines appeared to be stopped, according to the NTSB. As ANN reported, the C-45H, owned by Commemorative Air Force's American Airport Flying Museum, clipped trees before hitting the ground, slid about 100 yards, crossed a road, and knocked over a power pole. The left engine then caught fire. Peterson was seriously injured in the crash. 52-year-old co-pilot David Giannikos received minor injuries. According to a local TV news department in the area, the FAA is investigating a report of two planes flying under the Mackinac Bridge, which connects the upper and lower peninsulas of Michigan. The bridge authority says witnesses and workers saw two red, single-engine pontoon planes fly under the bridge on Monday. It's the third such report this summer. Flying close to a bridge is allowed by the FAA regulations only when it's necessary for a seaplane's takeoff or landing. That necessity would be a stretch to establish in this case. Pilots flying under the bridge could face fines, suspension, or revocation of their certificates. Still ahead, Northrop Grumman completes its KC-30 demo for the U.S. Air Force. Aging pilots say solve the shortage, let us come back to work. And the FAA okays the Sikorsky S-92 for higher crosswinds and payloads. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 is a normally aspirated four-seater that carries 1,100 pounds and cruises up to 190 knots with a next-generation Avidyne or Garmin electronic cockpit to show you the way. With a max range of 1,300 nautical miles, the Columbia 350 is the plane that you deserve when you're a businessman on the go or a Sunday flyer in a hurry to his next great adventure. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or a turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, August 2, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. Northrop Grumman's first KC-30 tanker aircraft, built by the company in an unsolicited demonstration for the U.S. Air Force, was completed in July, about a month after it was started. Paul Meyer, Northrop Grumman Vice President and General Manager of the KC-30 program, explained the significance. Quote, "Having the very first KC-30 already completing airframe assembly clearly shows the advantage in leveraging a current and efficient production line, which we feel offers a competitive advantage. We're absolutely committed to meeting and exceeding the Air Force's need to quickly replace its mission-critical tanker aircraft," unquote. Northrop Grumman's proposed KC-30 tanker is based on the Airbus A330 airliner. It can also serve as a cargo and troop transport plane and has more capacity than a competing design from Boeing. But those capabilities are not required by the Air Force in its request for proposals to replace the current fleet and would make the plane more expensive than the Boeing model. Northrop hopes the demonstration of the benefits of an existing commercial production line and fully operational industrial supply chain will give it an advantage over Boeing. The Senior Pilots Coalition says FAA Administrator Marion Blakey could help ease the current U.S. airline pilot shortage and minimize airline delays by expediting the FAA's elimination of the discriminatory age 60 rule. SPC's membership now tops 250, as more Vietnam-era pilots face forced age 60 retirement. The group's motto is, "Leave no pilot behind." SPC has asked the District of Columbia Circuit Court of Appeals to force the FAA to make any change in the age 60 rule retroactive, covering pilots already forced to retire. The FAA claims to be working toward a rule change, but has said the change would only apply to pilots reaching age 60 in the future. Sikorsky announced late Tuesday night the FAA has authorized its S-92 helicopter to take off and land in high crosswind conditions and to carry additional payload based on available engine power. The change allows the S-92 to take off and land in strong blowing crosswinds of up to 35 knots versus the previous limitation of 20 knots, and to carry additional payload based on the aircraft's surplus power on a given day. The GE CT7-8A engine used on the S-92 routinely provides power reserves in excess of minimum requirements. Sikorsky expects the aviation regulatory authorities in Canada and Europe will follow suit and validate the upgrades within their jurisdictions. The timing of the FAA's approvals also comes as Sikorsky is offering an S-92 military variant, the HH-92, in the U.S. Air Force competition for a combat search and rescue helicopter. And finally, Art Mattson bought a Cherokee 140 in 1991. He became frustrated at the plane's inability to use the many short grass strips in his area. So he came to EAA Air Venture in 1992 to seek advice from designers Steve Whitman, John Rontz, and Chris Heinz. Quote, "All three told me that the wing-to-fuselage juncture was critical. Two of them told me that vortex generators were a must," unquote. He went home, recertified his Cherokee in experimental research and development, and started cutting metal. Did the vortex generators he built work? Quote, "Yes, they dramatically improved the airplane's ability to get off the ground, but they gave me speed on the top end. Almost everyone said, it can't be. And that led to racing," unquote. He won his division at Lakeland with what he calls, quote, "a ratty plane. I was 1/10 of a mile an hour slower than the Cherokee 180s. The speed bug bit me," unquote. Mattson now owns 4 supplemental type certificates, which enable other Cherokee 140 owners to install his vortex generators, a propeller tip modification, wing tips, and gap seals. So how well does it all work? Mattson says his plane is good for 160 miles an hour now. He says he'll be happy if he can eventually make it to 170. That sure beats your average 140. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Eric Barger, president of Rotomax Rotary Engines. This company is introducing a line of aviation rotaries based on a long-established non-automotive design. And if you haven't done so already, subscribe to our AeroCasts. You can find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm spending the rest of this week at the Popular Rotorcraft Association's National Convention and Fly-In at Mentone, Indiana. These gyroplane guys would need more than vortex generators to make 160 miles an hour, but that doesn't mean there aren't some interesting things happening. I'll tell you more tomorrow. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.